My name is Jeff Harbach. I'm the CEO of Coffin Fellows and the host of the Coffin Fellows podcast. This season, our podcast is produced in partnership with Mighty Capital and features different Coffin Fellows as co-hosts. In this podcast, we dive deep into the personal narratives of some of the most successful names in the venture capital industry, but we're not here just to explore their highlight reels, however impressive they are. From failures and formative learning experiences to inflection points and aha moments, we discuss the real, authentic journeys that each individual goes through to become the best version of themselves in order to best serve the entrepreneurs they invest in. Covering various themes in venture capital investing, we speak with the world's top leaders in capital formation, all from a place of authenticity and vulnerability. Together, we'll unravel what truly makes a great venture capital investor. Now let's meet today's host and their guest.
Hi, my name is Maddie Callender, VP at Boost VC, the 500K accelerator for sci-fi tech. And I'm thrilled to host this series, Women Leading Deep Tech Investments, featuring the stories, motivations, and industry insights of venture capitalists who are taking big risks on the next generation of deep tech founders. Now, let me introduce my guest today.
I'm so excited to have you here. I want to give a warm welcome to Suzanne Fletcher, general partner at Prime Movers Lab. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am really excited to reconnect.
Thanks so much, Maddie. I am so delighted to be here and to support what you're doing with the Kauffman Foundation and Fellowship Program. I am a general partner with Prime Movers Lab. We invest in breakthrough science or early stage venture capital across six pretty big industry buckets, but that's energy, transportation, infrastructure, manufacturing, agriculture, and human augmentation. And so deep tech, kind of frontier tech, hard tech, what that means to us is there's really a high IP moat involved in what's being built and that it can have tons of kind of impact on humanity. I come to that personally from a place of just having a ton of varied interests. I'm definitely one of those kind of mile wide, inch deep people, really good at cocktail parties with trivia and things like that. But I love kind of evolution, cosmos, art, genetics, math, kind of all of those things. And this really for me is just a culmination of being able to learn more and work on those interests. I moved to the Bay Area after growing up and going to college in Philadelphia. So I've lived out here in the Bay Area, functionally my adult life, but a long time now and just kind of never left. I started my career out here. I worked at Morgan Stanley on Sand Hill for a number of years, banking early stage tech buyouts, kind of late 90s, early 2000s. So focusing on technology from the beginning. Went to business school out here and then spent a decade on the LP side before moving to the direct investing side, which was a very deliberate move. It was something I was very interested in doing. Incredibly fortunate to have the opportunity to join StartX, which is the Stanford entrepreneur community, where I managed an investment vehicle for them and worked on kind of interviewing entrepreneurs for the community in hardware and enterprise sectors. That's actually where I met the founder of Prime Movers Lab, Dakin Sloss. He's a two-time entrepreneur whose second company I had invested in back in 2015. And so in 2019, I joined him to kind of help build Prime Movers Lab.
So why startups and why investing? You know, what fundamentally gets you most excited about this industry?
Yeah, so maybe I'll answer that specifically by saying why deep tech investing? Because I don't think I would want to do just any type of investing. I had a great vantage point at StartX. You know, we invested in over 300 companies across 5 years, across industries, really a high level view. And it was what I saw was it was just night and day for kind of my consumer app, my enterprise SaaS companies versus kind of my deep tech med in the other bucket. And by night and day, I mean, it was just so much easier for consumer app enterprise SaaS to raise money. Easy process, multiple term sheets, so many funds interested in that. And there were plenty of co-investors kind of in the deep tech world or interested in that, but there were so few lead funds. Diligencing those companies, pricing the round, helping them afterwards, it's hard. But in that kind of difficulty, it creates opportunity. And my partner Dakin's thesis around kind of leading rounds and breakthrough science companies, building a firm, a venture firm exclusively to do that, I really agreed with that. It really resonated strongly with me. We had a long history of knowing each other. I believe deeply in our mission that we say is science and service, and there's kind of just no one else I'd want to do this with. So it's kind of a why investing in this sector with these people for me. It had to kind of all line up.
Amazing. Let's dig in to the deep tech thesis of Prime Movers Lab a little bit more. How you mentioned it earlier, but how does Prime Movers Lab define deep tech? And can you break down those six categories?
So Prime Movers Lab, we invest in breakthrough science. We are high conviction lead investors, and we want to work with prime movers, right? Those are the entrepreneurs that we believe have the ability to positively impact billions of lives on this planet. I think aperture is so important in investing, in particular when you're starting a new venture capital firm, which I know a lot of Kauffman fellows are interested in doing. In terms of aperture, you know, too wide, it's very hard to differentiate. Too narrow, and you may get forced to put money to work in the wrong time of a cycle. Kind of think AV only focused fund. It's really that porridge too hot, too cold kind of thing. And so for us, kind of breakthrough science, deep tech, it means there's an incredibly high IP moat with what's being built and kind of the barrier to entry, if you will, that's being created. And so it's really a matter of why now, you know, why this technology, why this set of founders doing this? And, you know, are we able to get investment that makes sense for kind of all the parties involved? We strive to be a continuum of capital. We do seed through Series B at this stage and really like to keep going with our companies to be able to kind of support them as they grow.
And how do you define a prime mover? And what are the qualities that you look for in a scientific startup founder?
There's nothing I love more than meeting founders all day. It would definitely be a bad job if you did not enjoy doing that. But the qualities I look for, really kind of grit and conviction, right? The best entrepreneurs, they have this clarity of thought that is just, it's amazing, right? And they can sell you on the big vision and the practical go-to-market. I need to see in entrepreneur kind of a true love of a customer and not just a technology, which really goes to solving a problem and being motivated to solve a problem, not to bring a solution to market, because that's what you need to kind of go the distance, is a true motivation and insight around solving a problem. We've been really fortunate to invest in a number of serial entrepreneurs. They're a really battle-tested group. I like founders, right, that have experienced those hard times, kind of often called that valley of disillusionment, where, you know, we can meet them on the other side. It's really important to understand, does someone have the conviction and the ability to kind of go the distance with what they're doing?
As we dig into deep tech, what do you think are some of the most important challenges we face today, and how are your investments playing a role in solving those challenges?
There's certainly a lot of challenges, but I really try not to lose sight of the fact that this is the best time to be alive in human history, almost across the planet. I use that as fuel to kind of think about how much further we can go. But you know, when you watch the news every day and you see kind of what's wrong with the world, I really try to go back to that touchstone of understanding how far we actually have come and being motivated by kind of what humanity has achieved. Some of the important challenges that we'd like to play a role in trying to help fund and solve, energy, decarbonization, really huge, affordable/attainable housing, right, for people, food, the entire kind of agriculture system, industrial system around that, and human health. I think all of those are just massive opportunities for humanity in front of us and exciting opportunities.
I know that, you know, prior to Prime Movers Lab, you were also an angel investor. How do you think about your personal investment thesis, and what sectors are you spending the most time focusing on? Or are you kind of overall looking at all these categories?
At Prime Movers Lab, you know, we blend macro thesis and industries with kind of a network-driven approach. We have those six macro sectors: energy, transportation, infrastructure, manufacturing, ag, human augmentation, and then a number of kind of sub-theses below those. We saw about 3,600 companies last year within those sectors. I spend a lot of my time within infrastructure, manufacturing, and ag. I like to say that I have some of the most understandable companies within the Prime Movers Lab portfolio, but really excited across that. We have six full-time PhDs on our team who are just brilliant, and I'm just constantly interacting with them, discussing technologies and trends. Personally, kind of within the industries we talked about, I'm interested in robotics and automation as it applies to housing, agriculture, kind of these really big problems to solve, and enabling technologies, second order derivatives of things we're looking at now as well. And I can't take credit for this, but I love the taste and waste as an investment thesis, kind of aspects of food safety, waste, recycling, circular economy. So I'm definitely stealing that taste and waste term.
I love that, taste and waste. When we think about deep tech funding, it's a little bit more complicated. I think you mentioned this at the very beginning. Early stage investors aren't necessarily as excited to write those first checks or lead checks into deep tech startups. How do you think about this funding puzzle for deep tech startups? And how does government, industry, and academia all play a role?
Yeah, let me start by just saying non-dilutive funding is amazing, right? And we've built our team and process to be able to do kind of rigorous diligence and identify companies that are what we'll call post-breakthrough, right? Post-scientific breakthrough. And that's the thing about deep tech that I really think differs from investing in other industries. I mean, fundamentally, no amount of venture capital is going to buy you a scientific breakthrough. And our hit rate has been so good in part because we focus on, has non-dilutive capital been used to fund that breakthrough before your expensive equity capital comes in? And on the government piece side, this is something we're taking incredibly seriously as a firm and being, I think, forward thinking in how we've staffed our organization to support our entrepreneurs. We recently brought on a new partner, Paul Irabino, decades of experience within DC. And he's charged with kind of leading our government relations, right? Helping our companies navigate doing business with the government, operating in highly regulated industries, all of this just super critical to deep tech.
Following up on that question, deep tech startups often take longer than traditional Silicon Valley built in a garage startups. You know, when you're thinking about your fund thesis and from an LP perspective, how do you take that into consideration and support your companies while still keeping the LPs in mind from a fund strategy?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. There's certainly a different rhythm and cadence to these types of companies, and in part why I think it's so hard for generalist funds to also try to do deep tech. Our LPs, you know, they're a mix of well-established family offices, institutions. We've been incredibly fortunate to select who we work with as LPs and make sure that they're aligned with our strategy. That alignment, the same alignment you have with founders, is really important with your LPs. They agree with our market opportunity and how we're approaching it. And we really promote our LPs getting to know our entrepreneurs, right? They've been a huge source of help with customer intros, board members, advice. I think funds often don't focus enough on how they can involve their LPs, how they can bring them into kind of solving this, working with entrepreneurs. And it's just been a massive source of power for us as an organization. So I do believe we've been fortunate to select LPs who understand the deep tech landscape pretty well.
That's great. I'm going to transition over a little bit into diversity in deep tech and ask some questions on that side of things. How has the deep tech ecosystem changed in the last few years? And what changes would you like to see in the next 5 years?
I think there's been a ton of positive change. First and foremost, a lot of the enabling technologies are there now, right? It really, so much of this is timing. And the why now for so many of these technologies is just stronger than ever. We've seen a huge amount of hard science startups. It really kind of reaffirms your faith in humanity as you meet with these founders. I think something that's been notable over the last year is the retail and public markets interest in deep tech narratives. That's been a really positive development and has expanded, you know, the source of capital for a lot of these companies. And more than ever, you know, you see new buckets of investors that are asking themselves things like, how do I get exposure to electrification of the grid? Companies facing, you know, true existential threats of technology shifts. That I feel is more real than it ever has been. I'd like to see that continue over the next 5 years, kind of bringing in more people to investing in these theses, thinking about them, and thinking about them not just as doing good, but really positive economic opportunities for change.
Yeah, I love that. The impact piece plus the economic piece is really important. Any ideas on how we can increase the number of women and underrepresented founders in deep tech?
You know, I think, Maddie, women who work in deep tech are not different than those who work in any other industries, right? They need employers that care about retaining top talent and who are committed to building world-class organizations, which means having a diverse workforce, right? And hiring the best regardless of sex, race, things of that nature. You know, we work really hard at Prime Movers Lab to make science accessible because it is, and it should be. You know, I think that that's something educators can help with very early in the pipeline. You know, the National Science Foundation, I think, quotes that women comprise 43% of the U.S. workforce. For scientists and engineers under 75 years old, and for those under 29, women are 56%. So some progress is definitely being made there. On the investment side, our team is, I believe, 50% women at this point. And I attribute a good deal of that to being a new firm, right? A firm created in 2018 without a ton of kind of legacy baggage and just the ability to hire the best talent. It wasn't intentional, but I'm really glad that that's kind of how the kind of composition ended up for us.
What advice would you give a founder getting started today in considering getting started or having just recently started a deep tech company?
I contributed a chapter to a book called Changing Tides, kind of powerful strategies for female founders. And I feel strongly, I kind of articulated it then that women need to extend what I call their venture radius, you know, how many people they know and being willing strongly to use those connections. You know, I saw so many financing rounds come together at StartX, and I did see a noticeable difference in the female founded versus male founded companies starting at that very first round. Leveraging the people around you, asking for the intro, having people in your network invest directly in your company, that's really powerful. And I love to see when female founders, deep tech founders are doing that. At Prime Movers Lab, right, this is a topic our founders care a lot about. Diversity of thought in their organizations, pay, equity. DEI, it's a board level topic for us. You know, we're discussing it at our board members, at our board meetings. And so very, very top of mind.
I'm excited to hear that, and I look forward to reading the Changing Tides book. I haven't read that yet. Thinking a little bit more about the audience on this podcast, Kaufman is looking into what makes a great investor, and I really want to focus on what makes a great deep tech investor. First question, what makes a great deep tech investor?
Probably a lot of the same things that make a great deep tech founder in terms of conviction, willing to believe something that others don't. Optimism, right? I think it's incredibly important. And, you know, fundamentally, we're all just trying to pick the right idea at the right time with the right founders and kind of a deal, a price that makes sense for all. But seeing those kind of patterns across deep tech founders in particular, and the mix of folks that have the charisma to articulate the big vision with the technical acumen of being able to kind of drive their team on that breakthrough is a really powerful thing.
I love that. If there are investors in the audience listening right now and they're considering either starting to invest in deep tech or maybe broadening from a generalist into deep tech, what advice would you have for them?
Well, I'm obviously biased, right? But I think it's the most impactful thing we can fund, right, and be a part of. Less than 10% of capital goes to deep tech companies right now. It's crazy if you think about it. You know, if you look at what's meaningful and what will have the biggest impact on society and the economy over the next 30 years, these are the types of companies that are going to have the biggest impact. You know, whether it's coronavirus vaccine or solar energy production or feeding the planet, all things that we've funded, these are the things that are really meaningful to making a better quality of life for most people.
Transitioning over a little bit to how you stay curious, you know, what podcasts or blogs or books do you read that inspire you? And of course, I have to ask, do you have any sci-fi recommendations as a deep tech investor?
So I think first and foremost, it's really important to get out of your comfort zone, which is what I tell myself and remind myself when I feel outside my comfort zone. I am a big audiobook fan. I recently listened to Energy, A Human History by Richard Rhodes, and Perilous Bounty, The Looming Collapse of American Farming and How We Can Prevent It by Tom Philpott. And I'm really curious about the future, but as I get older, I have, I think, a greater appreciation for how more deeply understanding history and the past informs your perspective, particularly in deep tech. And I'm really interested in the history of how as a society, how we've evolved with energy and agriculture, how we've gotten to the place that we are, how quickly change happens and the forces that affect that. So I really like to listen to things or to read things that help me blend both a view of the future with an understanding of the past.
So I guess this ties into the book question, but
what are you learning right now? And what are you, you know, what are you excited about right now? And what are you really diving into deeper right now?
As a fund, we're looking really carefully at clean meats, synthetic bio, longevity, atomically precise manufacturing, and psychedelics. Pretty diverse sets of things, but ones where we feel the macro factors are really strong driving them. And we've seen really interesting amount of founders pursuing these areas.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. I'm excited to read more as you dig deeper. And we'll wrap up with this last question. You mentioned at the end of one of your Medium posts contribution. And I wanted to ask the question, what fuels you to keep investing, learning, growing, and doing all the great work that you do at Prime Movers Lab?
I think it's just that it's the opportunity to contribute. It's incredibly important to me. You know, I think of my children, the world that they're going to be taking over. Knowing that each of us is responsible for our own experience in life, and we're responsible for making this world better and affecting the change that we want to see. And I think that this is my small way of contributing to that. I believe strongly that my team at Prime Movers Lab believes that too. You know, they inspire me day in and day out. And I feel like we're on this kind of journey and mission together with our entrepreneur family as well. So it's a great time to be doing this. It's incredibly inspiring.
Well, thank you so much, Suzanne. It was great to catch up with you today and hear everything that you had to offer our audience. And I can't wait to read the books that you mentioned. And I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks, Betty.
That's a wrap. Tune in next week for another candid conversation on what makes a great VC investor with your host, the Kaufman Fellows.